So I have a bit of a mysterious title, Spin Foams Without Spins. The motivation will be, well, first, Bianca asked me to give an introduction to the coherent state formulation of spin foam models. So that will be the first thing I do. But the motivation is we like the EPRL-FK models, but despite some heroic efforts from people like Aldo and others, these models are very hard to compute with, as we've been discussing. And it would be nice to have some sort of simpler but equivalent models. And one set of simplicity constraints that I really like are by Maite Dupuis and Etre Levine. They're called the holomorphic simplicity constraints. I'll be talking just about the Euclidean models, but there's also a version in Lorentzian. And yeah, these models in the coherent state formulation appear much easier to work with. And in some work I did with Andrzej Banversky, Lingxing Chen, and Laurent Friedel, we looked at how to coarse grain in these models, or at least attempt. And so I'll discuss that a little bit. And then lastly, if I have some time, I'll give some new results on how we can further simplify these models. Because even with this coherent state formulation, with these Dupuis-Levine constraints, it's still pretty hard to work with, and I think we need to do better. So, a good place to start is just regular old lattice cage theory, so maybe SU2 lattice cage theory. So the partition function is perfectly well defined and finite, and you can take any kind of lattice you like, say, for example, a 3D cubic lattice, and then the action is just the Wilson action, which is just trace over the plaquettes of the lattice, which here are just the squares. And you have some coupling constant beta, which is related to the temperature and the lattice spacing if you're doing Yang-Mills. And then here I've just drawn the dual like spin foam representation where each plaquette is a wire, and then the spin foam edges is a cable. And then we just put a little collar around the cables to show you where the group integrations are. And so I'll be using that notation quite a bit. And this is exactly what Benjamin talked about. These things I'll show are projectors, and they come together at vertices, and you can track them to get vertex amplitudes. So in the usual spin foam picture, we take the Boltzmann weights and we do a character expansion. If this was BF theory, we'd do a character expansion on the delta function. The only difference is in Yang-Mills, we have a modified Bessel function here in the face weight. And this modified Bessel function acts like an effective heat kernel for large J. So it's what regularizes everything. And so taking the limit where beta is large, this thing gives you back a delta function. So the infinite beta limit is BF theory, which is well known. And lots of people have suggested using Yang-Mills as a good regularization of BF theory. Like such as Robert Ockel, I think Etre might have at some point. Anyway. And then finally, finishing the spin foam construction, we do the group integrals over those characters in the expansion, and that gives us recoupling coefficients, which we contract at vertices. So in a cubic lattice, you'd have octahedral vertex amplitudes. You get this face weight from from the character expansion, you get some signs which are horribly, usually the worst thing to deal with. You have a sum over intertwiners on the edges, and then of course the sum over spins. Okay, so obviously this representation has advantages, otherwise we wouldn't do it. For one such advantage is, I mean, this is the strong, or it is a strong coupling expansion in Yang-Mills, and people have obviously used that for a long time in various ways. But also in quantum gravity, it's useful because it gives us access to a geometric picture. So instead of the group integral formulation, we get a geometric interpretation of the spins as areas, 6J's as tetrahedra, and of course we use this to impose simplicity constraints. So that's why we like it. However, after imposing the simplicity constraints, this thing is kind of a beast, as we all know, partially because of recoupling theory, which is takes a long time to learn and get used to, and even if you are used to it, it's still hard to do anything. Second of all, it's maybe not numerically intractable, but it's numerically inefficient. So if people want to do Monte Carlo simulations in Yang-Mills, they will do it in the group integral formulation. They won't. I don't know of anybody who does it in the spin representation. I've seen those papers as well, but I don't know.
But indeed, the main problem was
one of them. Right. Okay, and then lastly, what about the continuum limit? I mean, in Yang-Mills, it's actually fairly easy to get to at least a naive continuum limit from the group integral representation here. I think it's much harder to see, and I don't know of any derivations of that. So what I'm going to hopefully show is that by some trickery, we can completely eliminate recoupling theory. We can replace the sums over spins and intertwiners in terms of some continuous integrals, which are easy to evaluate analytically. And then hopefully that'll lead to some ways that we can do some calculations. So the starting point is the coherent state formulation of spin forms. And of course, this was initiated by Etre Levine and Simone Speziale, as well as Laurent and many others. So what I plan to do in the next few slides is I'll introduce the Bargmann-Fock representation of SU2, which is the starting point. It's on spinner space with some Gaussian measure. Then I will derive the coherent states in two lines. It's very easy in this representation. Then we will factorize the characters in this coherent state representation, like you usually do in spin foams. And then the final result of the next few slides will be the coherent projector on the SU2 invariant subspace. And these are precisely the projectors that Benjamin was talking about. And this is just one way of representing that projector. And what this will achieve is eventually all of those sums over spins will be eliminated. The sums over intertwiners will be integrals over spinners. The vertex recoupling coefficients will be totally avoided because we'll be using generating functions. And we will still have our geometric interpretation, which allows us to impose simplicity constraints and do all those nice things, take semi-classical limits, et cetera. Okay, so let's begin. So the Bargmann-Fock or holomorphic representation, you just take holomorphic functions of a spinner, and we have a Gaussian measure here on spinner space. So the representation is just simply this, and it's unitary with respect to this Hermitian inner product. And here, this spinner notation is it's a Bra-Ket notation where you just represent the two complex numbers as a row vector or column vector, and then the contraction is just the delta contraction. And then everything is just crystal clear. So since F is holomorphic, an analytic expansion in F gives you terms of different homogeneity. These are just the different spins, and they are the unitary irreducible representations. Okay, so let's derive the coherent states. Like I said, it just takes two lines, it's easy. And it all comes from a simple Gaussian integral. So starting from a one-dimensional Gaussian integral, hopefully you've seen this formula somewhere in your physics education. If you do a Gaussian integral, so here's the Gaussian measure on one complex number, and you have two sources, A and B, then the result of the integration is just e to the ab. That's just Gaussian integration. And then we can do this in two dimensions. So we have now spinners, and we contract, you know, a source z and a source spinner w, and the result of this integration is just e to the zw. And if you think a little bit, you can derive it directly from that pretty easily. And now the coherent states are just the expansion of these exponentials in a Taylor series. So if you expand both sides here, as I've done here, you see that the x states here are an overcomplete set of states, and they're orthogonal in different spin representations. Here the spins are k over 2. Okay, so that's the coherent states. And so now let's take that character and let's represent it in the coherent state basis. So we just take that complete set of states that I just mentioned. We take the trace in that representation. There we go. And then we are free to insert a complete set of states in between all of these group elements, which we do in the coherent state or in the spin foam construction. So here I've inserted complete sets of states everywhere. And then now all the group elements are sort of floating around, and we can collect all of these group element factors that belong to a single spin foam edge. So, and we put them together, and we have this group, the group integration on that edge related to all of these factors. This is nothing but the Levine-Spezialy coherent intertwiners in a different normalization. Okay, and in fact, this is the projector that we were seeking. And you'll notice that this P here is sort of begging to be exponentiated, right? It wants to be summed over the spins. And without loss of generality, we can do that because we saw that that these states in different states of different homogeneity are orthogonal. So summing over this thing and multiplying it by some state in some definite J's, all of the terms of different J's will be zero when you integrate over them. So that's what we'll do. So if you just sum over the spins in that previous projector, we get this exponentiated form. And this is the projector from this Bargmann-Fock space on n spinners to the invariant subspace. Okay, and it's easy to see that because we just convolute P with some holomorphic function F. That's just the definition of the convolution. And then, as we saw, that the spinners are a reproducing kernel. So when you integrate over Z here, you just get GW, and this is the group averaging of F. So this thing is clearly in the invariant subspace, and you can show that P squared is P, so it's a projector. So this thing that we derived is indeed this projector. And then now we just need to study P. Yeah, it is actually. I think Etra and Johann Tamburnino showed that there's a unitary isomorphism. So, yeah. Pretty sure.
Yeah, no, it's just, okay, so it's equivalent to the sum of all spins, Vj, Vj sum, and or Vj sum.
Yeah.
Same what Vj sum, okay.
Yes. Okay, so the last thing I want to show about this projector is we can do that group integral quite easily. And when you do that group integral in this expression, you get a sum over the UN intertwiners that were introduced by Laurent and Etra. And they have a very simple form in terms of these UN invariant scalar products, where these things here are just epsilon contractions of the spinners. And it has a nice geometric interpretation. These J's are the total areas of framed polyhedra. These states are coherent with respect to a UN action, and they have a manifest SL2C invariance because of these epsilon contractions. Okay, so that's the end of the introduction. I've shown how to represent a spin foam in terms of spinners, coherent states. So this was the generic spin foam sum we started with. And all we've done is represented this sum over intertwiners and product of vertex amplitudes in terms of integrals over spinners, that's the intertwiners. And then this vertex amplitude will be a contraction of these coherent projectors, which I hopefully have enough time later to show are simple generating functions. So that is what will allow us to circumvent recoupling theory. Okay, so now the way forward. So now that we have that, I'll give sort of a tour of some results as to how this simplifies the models. So first I'll discuss some coarse graining that you could do in BF theory or Yang-Mills, and also how that looks in a model with simplicity constraints. So at some point I'll have to introduce these holomorphic simplicity constraints, which I will do, and then later, hopefully I'll have enough time to talk about generating functions and how you can impose closure strongly in the coherent state formulation everywhere. And just to give you a hint at the final result, we'll be able to write the spin foam partition function as some integral over maybe some auxiliary contour integral variables, integral over the spinners on each edge. You can impose closure strongly by a delta function everywhere, and then you'll have vertex amplitudes, which are simple polynomials in the spinners. So this is Panzano-Regge, this is EPRL FK in some sense. They can all be formulated in this form. And one more note. So you might be thinking, okay, how are you possibly going to do these sums over spins with these possibly complicated face weights? Like, by face weight, I mean like 2j plus 1 or that modified Bessel function that I mentioned. Well, so this slide is basically just to say it's not a problem. So what you have to do is, if you have a projector and you take the trace over one of the strands, you have to, the trace of that has to give you the Boltzmann weight of that model. In BF theory, the Boltzmann weight is the delta. In Yang-Mills, it's this exponential. And so we need to insert some sort of kernel in this trace over coherent states such that we get these things back, and you can find these without too much trouble. This was proposed, I think, by Etra and Jimmy originally, and later by Etra and Maite. And then this one I found in a lattice gauge theory paper. Anyway, sometimes you have to insert some auxiliary variables, but it's not a problem. The next thing is, so if you have these kernels, this is what allows you to do coarse graining. So for example, in the BF case, if we take that projector, which I've drawn here graphically as a cable, and we want to take the trace over one loop, right? Well, as I just showed, the trace gives you back the Boltzmann weight, which is this delta, which allows you to do this SU2 integration. And this just gives you back the trivial reproducing kernel, which is just the open strands. This identity, combined with gauge fixing, allows you to reduce any BF amplitude completely. It's what gives you triangulation invariance. So this is a very key identity, and it's what allows you to do computations. And in Yang-Mills theory, you can also take the trace with that other kernel. It gives you something else, which looks a bit nastier, but you can also work with it. So the main question is, can we derive a similar kind of identity, but in a non-trivial model, something with simplicity constraints imposed? And that's, okay, so first I should tell you what those holomorphic simplicity constraints are. I won't derive them, but we'll just use them. So in a model with spin 4 gauge group, there's this isomorphism with SU2 cross SU2. So the projector for that model will just be a tensor product of these two SU2 projectors. And then the simplicity constraints are very simple. You just do something like you set the left spinners proportional to the right spinners with some caveats about closure constraints. But in Maite and Etra's model, you don't impose these constraints on the spinners in the projector. You impose them on the boundary of the vertices. So if you want to impose them on the boundary, you need to take the square of the projector and you impose them on these intermediate spinners. So I would take like two of these squared projectors and I would set the left X spinners to the right X spinners, okay? And then these Zs and Ws are the spinners that get contracted at the vertex, at the vertices.
Rho
is a constant related to the emergency parameter. It's like 1 plus gamma over 1 minus gamma, something like that. Okay, and then there's another, so that works great, but there's something easier that you could try. This is something that I proposed with Anjay and Lin Xing and Laurent, and that is, why not just impose the constraints on the spinners in the projector. So I've labeled this internal simplicity constraints because instead of imposing the constraints on the boundary of the vertices, you're imposing it on the spinners which contract at the vertices. And I think that's okay because like Laurent and I looked at the asymptotics of these variables which get contracted, and you also get in a large spin limit, you also get a Regé-like action. It's a twisted Regé action. And so imposing simplistic constraints on these variables might lead to a sensible model as well. No, in both cases, it's not.
use p, p times p is. You didn't use the p times p.
No. Well, I used, I started with p squared on the previous slide, and then imposed the constraints on the intermediary states.
I think the question is also, because this is also the projected onto H-invariant stuff, so it's the projecting onto H-invariant stuff?
Yes, it is. But it's a smaller space, I would assume.
No, actually,
or, I don't know.
Yeah, well, it has to be.
Yeah.
What is the twisted ridge action?
What is the twisted ridge action? So, I don't know if I could. It's one where you find that you get an action that looks like. Yeah. You get an action that looks like. So if I and J are like vertices in your four simplex. Then you get you look at the asymptotics of the integrand of the vertex amplitude, and you find that it goes like jij. Maybe I'll call this ab. Jab, and then you get something that looks like Xi AB. So if this thing, if Xi had the interpretation of a 4D dihedral angle, then it would be the Regge action, but it's something, it's actually like a, anyway, yeah, we can talk about that later.
It's a generalization of the
Regge action. Right. So if you impose some extra matching conditions, then you do get the interpretation of the Regge action. Okay, so the reason why you might want to try this simpler proposal is because if you look at this constrained set of projectors, then they look like almost like those UN intertwiners that I mentioned on a previous slide, except there's this extra factor in front, depending on J. And this thing is definitely not of a Yang-Mills type, because this J involves all of the spins on a cable. And one might try to do computations with this projector, because it's in a much simpler form. And so that's what we did. We were able to compute the loop identity with this thing. It gives you kind of a mess, but you can still work with it. And it allows you to compute degrees of divergence in Pachner moves. You can actually compute these moves exactly in some sense. And what you get is that when you contract vertices together, you get non-localities popping up everywhere. So, you know, the idea is you should propose some kind of truncation and do what you can. And we found that some interesting things, like, for example, playing around with the face weights and plotting that versus values of rho, you get some sort of competition between these things, which might allow for you to tune things in such a way to give you the divergences that you expect. Anyway, I think Ling Xing is going to talk more about this tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. But the point is, even though we can do this, and this might be a way forward, I think we still need to do better, and I think we can. So these are just some directions that I've been going to try and do better. So one of them is writing things in terms of generating functions. So hopefully I can state those results. And the other thing is imposing closure everywhere, which gauge fixes this SL2C invariance. We can basically do this for free. It's not hard. And this was originally proposed by Florian Conradi at Laurent and also Etra in their UN intertwiner paper. Okay, so let's talk about generating functions. So we're trying to simplify the partition function. We're trying to avoid recoupling coefficients by replacing the vertex amplitudes by these simple generating functions. So you'll recall in the projector, the coherent projector, we had these UN invariant scalar products, okay? There's some epsilon contractions of the spinners. Now, I won't be able to drive this, but if you take an action where you have one of these UN invariants on each vertex of a graph, and you contract these vertices by integrating over these W spinners with this reality condition, I know it's a lot of details, but stay with me, that there's a formula where you can reduce this to a simple determinant in those boundary X spinners. So this is a D plus one dimensional block matrix of 2x2 elements, which are the outer products of these boundary spinners. And this determinant evaluates nicely in some polynomial in cycles of the graph that you contracted with. So if you label the vertices by 1 through 5 like this, and you'll have a x12 here, x21, x23, x32. So for every edge between I and J, you have one spinner, which is like xij, and then you have another spinner belonging to this half edge, which is like xji. Anyway, you don't need to know the details of this. This is just a result we can use. And this allows us to contract the coherent projectors at a vertex to give us a determinant in terms of the boundary spinners. W check is like the complex conjugate multiplied by an epsilon. It's the canonical dual of the spinner. It's not a restriction. It's just the definition of contraction, basically. Okay, so let's use this result. But in order to use this result, you'll recall the coherent projector was not in an exponentiated form, right? It had this form. So it's almost exponential. If it just didn't have this J plus one factorial here, it would be exponential, and then you could use this result, right? So we'll have to use some trickery to get rid of this J plus one factorial. So that trickery is we use an integral representation of the reciprocal gamma function. So there's this contour integral. It's basically any contour that goes counterclockwise around the origin. You can take, if the integrand is analytic, you can just make it a circle and just use Cauchy's theorem. Or you can take this thing to be along the imaginary axis, and this will be like some kind of inverse Laplace transform. So if we just use this in the expression for the projector, we find an integral representation of the coherent projector. And now this UN invariant scalar product is exponentiated. And now we can use that theorem on the generating functions. Okay, so let's do that. So here's an example. We take, say, like a tetrahedron, for example. So we have four projectors being contracted together. So on each four of these cables, I've introduced a contour integral so that we get that exponent, that integral representation. And then I use the that formula that gives 1 over the determinant. And so this is the expression for the vertex amplitude. So we have four contour integrals, and this determinant, the matrix of this determinant has some nice properties that allows us to evaluate it for any boundary graph you have. For the tetrahedral boundary graph, it has this form, which looks kind of symmetric. And these signs have to be determined in a way, but that's not a problem. And these amplitudes, depending on the cycles, are just given by these epsilon contractions of the spinners again. So that's our vertex amplitude, no recoupling coefficients required. If you wanted to go back to recoupling coefficients, you would expand this in a power series, integrate out the spinners, and you'd get 6J symbols. Or if you did this for a four simplex, you'd get 15Js, or whatever you want. So just to be super explicit, here's the Panzano-Reggi model. So we have, again, some contour variables on the edges. We have this BF kernel. Yeah, because you have to work with the squared projector. So we need to, use this thing because here the Zs and the Ws are what contract at the vertex, and the Xs live on the boundary of the vertex amplitudes. This, you mean the Panzano-Reggi?
Yeah.
This is just general. This is just BF theory. I just wrote Panzano-Reggi so that, you know, because people are familiar with it. But this could be done for any BF theory. This could be done for Yang-Mills theory, at least in SU2. I don't see any problems with extending it to SUN. And it can also be done for the Levine-Dupuis model. So this is a generic way of writing spinful models. And yeah, again, this is the form of the delta BF. It's actually very easy. It's just for every face of the two complex, you need to add an observable that looks like this. So this is delta BF. So it just depends on the spinners. If you want to do Yang-Mills, you'll have to introduce some extra auxiliary variables, but those are not a problem at all. A nice thing about this is these contour variables essentially eliminate the scales on each spin foam edge, because the total norm of the polyhedron in that picture can be removed by a change of variables. And that's what I'll discuss next. Essentially, by imposing closure strongly, like what Laurent did many years ago, you can restrict the spinners on each spin foam edge to be closed and to have norm one. Okay.
What about the ST? You have to AST, right? So you only have S.
Here? Yeah, it's because, so depending on, so you have a spin foam edge and you have S on one side and T on the other. So it depends on the orientation. Yeah, something like that. Okay, so just over like two slides, I'm just gonna explain the gauge fixing that you do. So again, start with that squared projector. We want to impose closure on these intermediary X states. That is, we want to impose this constraint, and setting this thing equal to one is what what fixes the norm of the polyhedron. And it's a simple trick. You just insert this mathematical identity, which you can do by explicitly integrating if you want. You put that into the integrand, you do a Fadeev-Popov trick, and then you're left with this delta function imposing closure. Yep. For any model.
For any model, you can inverse the constraints. So you can integrate over geometric or simplicity.
Yep. And my motivation for doing this, I'll get into that later. So, okay, I should make a point. The reason this works is because this is a Hermitian matrix, and so there's some GL2C transformation that'll take you to the identity. That'll take this thing to the identity. So you can see here, by integrating over GL2C, this thing will be some kind of constant. And because there's a U2 invariance, you get the volume of U2 and then some extra factor. Just one half. Which variables? Maybe. I mean, that could be.
It's a constant constraint, so I see that you can prove that. But there could be dual way. It might be hard to find the right
problem. Yeah, it might be hard, but it's probably the same thing.
But you can't do both. I mean, the difficulty is to do both.
Do both. What do you mean both?
Both the simplicity.
No. We can impose closure, and we can impose simplicity, no problem. I mean, simplicity you just do by hand, right? This is a mathematical equivalence. I'm not changing the partition function by imposing these constraints. This is a gauge fixing. The hard thing would be to also impose area matching in the path integral, which I suspect is possible because the area matching constraints, they commute with the closure constraints. So I mean, in principle, I think you can impose both. And if you were to do that, at least in three dimensions, area matching and closure constraints gives you a Regé geometry. So that would totally localize all of those spinner integrals. And all you'd be left with is those contour variables that we started with. That would be a pretty big simplification. And that was my original motivation for looking at this. So these results I'm showing are not new. They were shown by Laurent and Florian Conradi. And I was hoping to also be able to impose the area matching constraints, but so far, I've failed.
Yep.
It would still be the Pinzano Regé. It's just completely equivalent. You would just have Pinzano Regé in terms of just a bunch of contour integrals, and at each vertex, you'd have some polynomial from the generating function.
So after integrating the divergence of the Pinzano Regé model,
no, this is not related to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a different gauge fixing then.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is gauge fixing there's an SL2C invariance in the coherent state. And yeah. But those divergences can be regularized easily by just working in Yang-Mills. And everything I've said also applies there.
When you work in coherent state, you will be satisfied by complex variables. And a priori, you have this extra variable because you want coherency, and you think they are irreducible to the coherency. But when you're in constraint in the background, you can think of these complex directions or imaginary directions as being pure gauge. And And essentially, you can reproject completely localized integral the only price to pay is the change of measure that is needed. So this is a very, very powerful trick that you first coherentize the system and then you completely classicalize it. So it's a quantum integral that localizes exactly on the classical function. It's very, it's extremely powerful.
Yeah.
But it's a well-known trick.
This slide is not so important, just some extra details. Essentially, after doing that Fadeev-Popov trick, so here, this d omega is just the spinner measure with this delta function imposing closure, and then we get some non-trivial kernel in the coherent, in the contour variables here, and it just sort of mixes them together, and that's the result. No, right. It's not Gaussian. Yeah.
So your n here and here
is the order of the... Yeah, n is the number of strands.
The number of strands.
Right. Yeah. And, yeah. So that's the result.
There will be something like the dimension regular.
Yeah. Okay, and then this is basically the last slide-ish. Just kind of summarizing what we did. So here I've just written explicitly this partition function for Yang-Mills, but also BF or with simplicity, et cetera. It might look more complicated than the usual spin foam sum, but here I think everything is just more explicit. And you know, in the usual spin foam presentation, everything's kind of hidden in recoupling coefficients and intertwiners and this kind of thing. Here, the vertex amplitudes are just those polynomials that I wrote down, so you can write them down easy. This is just the usual Lebesgue measure with that delta function imposing closure. This was that k function that I showed on the previous slide, which is not complicated. And these are possibly some kernels if you want to do Yang-Mills theory. Tau f? Tau f is a, so when I mentioned handling the face weights, yeah, this would be the tau f. So this is actually just a integral representation of the modified Bessel function. And you just carry it along, and if you want to integrate out a face, you can just use Cauchy's theorem. And the point is that if you want to do calculations, you can. Still working on that. Yeah, I don't know exactly what the interpretation of these variables are, but it's related to fixing scales. I'm actually hoping to work with Etra maybe on this. Figure out exactly what's going on. It's, yeah. Yeah.
I have kind of the same question somehow about the geometry of this integral. So you didn't say that the last integral on the Grassmannian, this is an integral on the polyhedron geometry.
Right.
Okay, so that's a classical integral. You understand what I mean? Now the other ones, so there's LF, there's S and T. So what do they? So clearly there are like some kind of action on this polyhedral geometry. Is there, well, you know, because you have a weight on this polyhedral geometry that is labeled by S, T, and these S's and the tau.
Yeah.
So somehow it's a they control a different way of sampling the polyhedral geometry, but you have an understanding of, you know, what is this control parameter?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
No, I mean, this
or,
is pretty
from
new.
From that perspective, because that's, or, you know, the nature of these weights. It seems it has to be some kind of natural way of sampling, you know, polyhedral.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yeah. So the only hint that I have so far is that when I integrate it out, when I impose the closure constraints, you also impose that the total norm of these spinners is equal to 1. And the result of this is this mixing of the contour variables on polyhedra belonging to different vertices. So it's somehow...
I mean, the question is, where is the area in the next slide or here? Where is the area matching the region?
It's not.
What would be the exact area matching in this position?
So the exact area matching would be if you had... there's a difference. So this ST seems to control the scale of the total area, whereas the area matching is between triangles. Tetrahedra, yeah. Whereas the area matching constraints, as we know them, are between triangles, areas of triangles.
Yeah. So some kind of relative geometry. So there's no parameter here that control this relative?
No.
Okay.
Although I found that because of the orthogonality of the different SU2 representations, that at least in the integrand, the areas have to match term by term. So as an integrand like so, they don't have to match. But anyway, this is a little bit too vague. The hope would be that you could do some Fadeev Popov trick in the same way. So.
Because if you go to the next slide, then you do that for quantum origin, is there a way to kind of re-understand why this is quantum origin, why this is 3D gravity as an averaging over, you know, classical idea?
Don't know. But if you have some ideas, I'd be glad to hear them.
But I guess the advantage of doing that is that now it's easier to track down what are the divergence, the asymptotes, and all of these properties.
Yep.
My question is basically, connected to that, is there any way to see the asymptotics in here?
Yeah.
It's probably not that easy because you have the sum over all the j's, right?
So there's no sums over j's here.
It's bt.
The sum over j's is already some hidden, taken care of.
So all of those divergences, it's actually very easy to see. All of those divergences come from taking beta to infinity. That's the beta. That's the BF limit. Mm-hmm. So this thing here, for finite beta, is just it's just finite. There's no divergence. And there's an easy way to usually take the beta goes to infinity limit and extract that degree of divergence.
No, I rather meant the geometric interpretation of the amplitudes in terms of polyhedra, in the sense of the large shaded.
Maybe, I don't know. It'd be interesting to look.
I guess you could answer that. Large J should be small tau or big tau. It's encoded into the...
You don't integrate the whole contour, but only over some very deformed contour, very far outside, and then only over...
So the divergence comes from tau goes to zero or infinity in that dimension? Tau goes to zero.
Yeah.
So it's really the poles in tau that control the large J.
Yes.
Right?
But the integral is still, like the eigenlimits are still the spinors, but that's X here.
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah.
So you have
the... If you think of them as polyhedra already, they're already the polyhedra. Once you're in this Grassmannian, the variables are the polyhedra.
The spinors, they do have both the spinors.
You mean in the large...
Some large...
J limit, yeah, it's true.
In principle, if you look at the poles of the generating function, it's supposed to contain the asymptotes.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult because there are so many variables. So the singularities are not isolated poles like in complex, in one-dimensional complex analysis.
Yeah.
They're extended singularities. So
and they're essential singularities, right? they don't have any.
Well, these are rational functions.
No, they are determinants. You see, there's determinants. So,
but you have each of
so
the 1 over s.
Oh, no, but this is gone. He has integrated that.
You're only left with a.
But the integral of s is still there.
Yeah, the e to the 1 over s is still there. Well,
which one?
No. Actually, the e to the 1 over s goes into the generating function. So we have e to the s, and then after doing that, remember that formula for the generating function that gets you to the determinant in the denominator? So this is where the 1 over s's go. And then there was another factor of s squared that you pull in here to make these all. I mean the next one.
So that's the 1 over s.
So yeah. So you do that generating function identity, you get this in the denominator, mm-hmm. but then you also have these that get multiplied into that determinant, mm-hmm. and the final result is this. So that's where the e to the 1 over s's went. And there's still essential singularities in a sense that you could, for example, do an integral over S1, and then that would put some polynomial here into the exponent, and you'd have 1 over S's again. So you can always do one of these integrals, and then you're back to some.
So the infinitely many terms that give you the contribution to the essential singularity will probably just be the sum of the spins. So that's
yeah. But in Yang Mills, if in principle, if you were to do all of these contour integrals, you'd get something finite.
Oh yeah.
So somehow these things that look like essential singularities, somehow when you put that Yang-Mills kernel in, they work out to something finite, somehow. Which is just a repeat of what I just said. Okay, so I think I've said all this. So the conclusion, we still need to figure out the physical meaning of these contour variables. If anyone has any ideas, I'm all ears. There's also, because we've reduced from the spinner space to the Grassmannian, there's a natural action of the conformal group. I'm not really an expert on conformal geometry, but it'd be interesting to understand what the action of that group is. Lastly, these generating functions have a very similar form to the ones that appear in the 2D easing model. And I'm investigating some ways in which those techniques for exactly solving that could be applied. And then I also mentioned also maybe imposing matching constraints by the same Fadeyev-Popov procedure. All right, thanks. It's right. Right. It would be very easy though. If I wanted to do impose simplicity constraints, I would take two copies of this for SU2 cross SU2, and I would just set these x's equal to the or proportional to the x's on the other one. And then you're done. No, that's the Maite Petro model. Right. So in that sense, the generating function formulation that's the advantage of that, is you can impose the Dupuy-Levine constraints in an easy way. Only asymptotically.
Yeah, and the question is, does it not change the possible the enforcement?
Right. And so, yeah, like I said before, those constraints seem to commute classically. But all attempts that I've tried to actually do this in practice, I wasn't able to.
But in the end, you already have something which is just a representation of this polynomial.
Yep.
Formation of function.
Yeah. So what you'd want to do is you'd want to insert a delta on every face of every edge, which looks like the twisted geometry constraints. So you insert these everywhere, and you can achieve this by inserting some complex number lambda like this. So you integrate over lambda like so, and this will give you some number. And then you put this into the path integral. You do a change of variables in lambda, and the magical thing that happens is all the lambdas in the integrand disappear, and it just becomes a condition on the measure. But doing these integrals over lambda in the measure, it was just too hard.
Would you also change the measure? I mean, if you use these constraints, the mutual Poisson brackets would give a non-trivial.
I think they commute. I don't think they give any non-trivial.
Any more questions?
Jeff,
yeah.
I want you to be daring for a brief moment. So it seems Young-Nils and also the spin models have a very similar representation. Have you ever thought about looking at both and trying to couple them? And could you imagine how you would do that in this parallelism?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually haven't thought of that.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe you could just tensor them together somehow.
Coupling the matrix, so you would have to find a way to represent the inverse matrix tensor.
Well,
so because if you don't input anything, they're just both sitting there and then not talking.
Yes.
How would you
couple them? Yeah.
So the
minimally couple. Yeah.
Or the technical invention is how to represent this. I think there's an advanced matrix.
Yeah.
And how easy is it to consider them in terms of the spin-off?
Because in the spin representation, I argue that you should just, whether the coupling constant should be somehow sensitive to the spins of the spin term. But here, of course, you have no spins at all. So,
yeah.
This is the.
Yeah, maybe.
Missing this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably even more nightmarish.
Maybe, but maybe not, actually. In what sense?
You solve your Mill theory in proof of Feynman.
So.
I don't know. I mean, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, let's say you consider a 3D, like a partition function for eight cubes or something, which for them you can express it, and then they get a polynomial and x variables, alternative that would look like.
So I can go further than that. And I was actually really excited about this because, like, I was trying to totally eliminate the spinners and just be left with these contour variables. And I was like, oh, I think I can do that. And, you know, this would be some kind of exact solution of Yang-Mills, right? But then reading through books on lattice gauge theory, I mean, what this contour representation is, it's just like a systematic packaging of the usual strong coupling expansions. So in principle, in Yang-Mills, when they do a strong coupling expansion, they can compute diagrams to arbitrary order in beta if they want. Yeah, but in practice, that works out to maximum like 12th order in beta, something like that. And this is just, another formulation of that. Maybe. I don't know.
But so you think it's feedback, so but this was known or not known?
No.
The depackaging was
known. I don't know if that is known.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But the exciting thing for us is that we always want to do the beta goes to infinity limit.
Yeah.
And in that case, you can evaluate these integrals in a stationary phase.
Mm-hmm. But the funny thing, yeah, so maybe then we need the repackaging because beta goes to infinity, so that opposite to the high temperature.
Opposite to the high temperature, then?
If I know what beta is.
Yeah, I think it is the high temperature.
Beta zero is high temperature.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's the strong coupling.
Yeah,
is
the opposite of high temperature.
Yeah, beta is going to infinity is the weak coupling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to work on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Other more questions? If not, then please remember that in 15 minutes we'll have a photo shooting. And let's thank the speaker again.